No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me once again on the Colts Cast. I want to say and start off with telling all of you, the listeners, those of you who have been interacting with both myself and the podcast throughout its run here have been amazing, and I just can't thank you guys enough for sharing the show, being a part of the show, loving the live shows. Those are always a blast. And I think that you guys are enjoying them as much as I am. And so I just wanted to tell all of you thank you. And if you could continue to, you know, support the show by sharing it out and letting people know who may not know about it, other Colts fans and so on and so forth. So but let's jump this show off, man. We got Chris Blystone from Stampede Blue. Chris, what's up?
Not a whole lot. How's it going?
Great. You wrote a fantastic article today on the site, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this and kind of let you kind of, you know, sit in the driver's seat here for a few minutes, because a lot of the conversation about McDaniels is what? How much he failed in Denver and as a offensive coordinator in St. Louis and so on and so forth. But, you know, you added some great insight to this that I thought a lot of people really needed to hear and read. And, you know, for those of you know, the Colts fans who are struggling to kind of wrap their arms around the McDaniels hire, or so I guess we could say the reported hire, since it still isn't official. But for those who are struggling with this, kind of drop a little knowledge on them here real quick, if you could, and kind of tell them what you came up with and where your direction for this article came from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think most Colts fans who have been investigating this process, who've been watching this unfold, aren't really sure what to think. And there's a pretty common narrative, and you kind of get the same general idea that, okay, Josh McDaniels is the guy who's failed anytime he wasn't a part of the Patriots. And how could we possibly know if he's any good, because he's never succeeded apart from Bill Belichick? And that's a fair assessment to some degree, because it is true in that he hasn't had success apart from the Patriots, but he's continued to have success as a part of the Patriots. And that's one of those things where when you note that he continues to do really well in one place, to me, the assumption that, oh, well, it's just Belichick, that doesn't really make sense to me, right? Mm-hmm. He's a defensive guy, and I know that he's brilliant, and I know that he could probably step in, be an offensive coordinator on any team and raise the level of their play. I get that. But that's not what he's doing, and he doesn't just have dead weight on the team. He didn't hire Josh McDaniels on his team to just draw a salary and not contribute. And we recognize that he's good at the things that Belichick asks him to do. So connecting that with, like, the idea that he just completely imploded and that he is the reason why there was all this problem, that didn't pass the smell test to me. So I started doing some more digging, and I noticed something that just I found to be curious. And that is, if you listen to anybody involved from Denver media, they're very bitter about him. They're very angry. There's like a very angry undertone just in their attitude toward him. And that just made me really curious, because, like, okay, Colts fans don't like Pagano, but now that he's gone, we don't care about him, right? Like, right. We're not hostile toward Pagano. I don't feel, you know, I don't begrudge him anything, but there really legitimately seems like there's still hard feelings. Like, he somehow, you know, damaged the franchise. And that doesn't really make sense to me either, because, you know, 2 years after he's gone, you've got Peyton Manning, and we saw what happened there. So it's not like this was this long-suffering period that they had to go through the dark ages after McDaniels left. And it just made me real curious to dive in and see what's the deal. What happened here, and why, you know, is there more to this? And so this article kind of came out of that place of just, like, I just wanted to see if there's something different and something maybe more comprehensive than the, oh yeah, he just sucked in Denver and he just ruined everything explanation that we kind of get from, you know, national, local, every, you know, level of media. That's kind of the general consensus. He sucked in Denver, and, you know, we know that he's just, that's what he was there.
Right.
And so I wanted to dig into that a little bit more. And, you know, so the idea that I kind of ran with and that I started in the article, which was comparing it to the Browns, because, you know, we automatically, I mean, you think the Browns, this is sad, and I mean, I apologize if there's anybody who, you know, knows a Browns fan.
Don't apologize. They know what they've been through.
just pat them on the back and tell them, like, do something else, dude. Get your life together. Right. But we expect dysfunction from the Browns, right? We expect that they're going to do stupid things at every level. We expect their coaches to screw up. We expect their front office to screw up. We expect their players to do dumb things in the games. It's like what we expect from them. And we would never blindly just assume that because one thing goes wrong, it's only this person's fault. We understand it's more complex than that, but somehow in this McDaniels conversation, that whole idea has been thrown out the window. And suddenly we think like, oh, Josh McDaniels is the sole reason that there was failure in Denver. And if it hadn't been for him, they probably would have won the Super Bowl every year or some, I mean, obviously that's right. Hyperbole, but we kind of have that idea.
Right. And one of the things that you touched on that I think that people don't really understand. Now look, Sean McVay right now is the youngest head coach in the league. I think did he just turn 30, 32? He's younger than what...
He's right around there, yeah.
Yeah, he's younger than what McDaniels was when he took over in Denver. I think McDaniels was like 33 at the time.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Jake and I or who it was, but we've talked about this in the past. They gave him not only the keys to the car, they gave him the keys to the dealership. And they really just, you know, here, you're 33. This is your team. This is your roster. This is your this. This is that. They really gave him everything. And McDaniels, I think you have to put yourself in a 33-year-old man's shoes who is getting the keys to that dealership and saying, I have three or four take-home cars. You know what I'm saying? You give the person all of that control. You've got to be a very disciplined, a very smart, and you've got to be, you have to be a very special kind of person at that age to be able to take all of that in and be able to work wonders with it. Ultimately, you had, like you mentioned in the piece, they had, you know, Jay Cutler, who is notoriously a pain in the ass. I mean, just in general, while he was in Denver, just the same, you knew that those two minds weren't going to connect. And with all the power that McDaniels had, I think that I wouldn't necessarily say it went to his head. It could have. I don't know him. You know, we've not spoken personally. But, I mean, you have all of that thrown into one bundle, and you expect the guy not to slip and fall at all. And you find those clashes immediately.
Absolutely.
You know, with that quarterback. And not only that quarterback, but that roster, because that roster wasn't used to what they found in McDaniels, as you wrote.
Well, and that's the thing that I think is really important to understand going into it is who Mike Shanahan was, both to the organization and to the players and the fans. Mike Shanahan was an unexpected firing. I don't know if people remember this. Nobody saw it coming. Right. So the year, mm-hmm. I mean, they went 8-8 and he was fired after the season. And it was a shock. And one of the first comments you hear is Jay Cutler saying it was a mistake. You know, saying to the media, he doesn't think that it was the right decision. And so this is not like what we just experienced, where everybody is chomping at the bit to bid Chuck adieu and never see him again.
Right.
And where the players are sad to see the guy go, but understand ultimately that it's a good decision. This split a locker room because they didn't think that it was the right call. And your leader on the team, probably their best offensive player, is saying to the media that he thinks it's a bad decision. That doesn't exactly set you up to do great right out of the gate.
And with all fairness involved here, I don't know that it would have made, I mean, McDaniels, I think that you had, a clash of everything that could have gone negative did go negative in a, you know, a year and a half span. But I don't know that it would have made a difference regardless of who the next head coach was there.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things that I think, it's a silly comparison, but it was almost like the rebound girlfriend from a long-term relationship.
Right.
I mean, they'd had Shanahan there for 14 years, and he had the keys to the dealership. He was running the show, and then he's gone, and he was known to be kind of a player's coach, and there are some things that I read that said, and I can't think of a specific reference offhand, but that said he got along well with the players, and he had kind of created this environment. They hadn't won since Elway retired. They had won one playoff game and won the division once in almost a 10-year span. They were mediocre to the core, and I understand. I think in that regard, Pat Bowlen absolutely made the right decision to move on. I don't think that he made the right decision in hiring a coach, and I'm not saying that because I think McDaniels couldn't be a good coach. I think he wasn't the right coach for them because they obviously weren't interested in rebuilding, which is really where they kind of were a little. I mean, even though they had a mediocre roster, when your mediocre roster is old, you're in a rebuild, even if you don't know it. If your mediocre roster is young, it may be a different thing because you might be able to bring somebody in to develop them. But if you've got an old and mediocre roster, the chances are, and the Colts experienced this last year, I mean, you lose a couple of key pieces and suddenly you're not mediocre anymore. And that's kind of what happened with Cutler. I mean, Cutler's gone, and he was one of the better pieces there, despite that really being his high point of his career. And when he moved on, it kind of fell apart. And, ultimately, Football Outsiders has them ranked 19th, I think, in offense in McDaniel's first year. And that might have actually been, kind of saying something for what he was able to do, because Kyle Orton's not exactly lighting things up anytime in his career. So,
right. And, something else that I think that people kind of bypass with those two seasons. First and foremost, the defense that was there with his 8-8 season in 09 was significantly better than what the 09 team pushed out. I mean, what the 2010 team pushed out. And not only that, but his offense was actually a little bit better. They just didn't have the team dynamic yet. And it was ugly because they were getting slaughtered in a lot of those games. But even just the raw points, they gave up in 09 in McDaniel's first year, they gave up 324 points on defense, 471 in 2010. Granted, he's the head coach. He's going to take some flack for that, should take a lot of flack for that. But he improved their offense by just under 20 points throughout the game, or throughout the season. But the point is that the team wasn't, the team was not done growing underneath McDaniels. And that's something that, I mean, look, if the Colts did the same thing in maybe Pagano's first bad year, his first 8-8 season, would that have been eventually, even if let's say we don't know anything that happened after that, and halfway through the season the Colts are 4-4-8 or 4-5 or whatever you want to say, just a very mediocre squad. And what if the next guy they come in just kind of ruins everything? I mean, even under Fox, the next season they went 8-8 again. They actually won the division at 8-8. That's not good, but they still gave up more points than McDaniel's first season, and they didn't score as many points as McDaniel's did in either of his seasons as head coach. So you have a complete, and the good thing that Fox brought was probably that old man, that father figure type thing, whereas McDaniels was maybe the cocky brother, you know what I mean? So,
sure.
I mean, after you go from Shanahan from all those years to a guy who's 33, back to Fox, who was well into his 50s, I believe, at that time, and that I think that could have been, the peak and the valley that just didn't go together from what they'd had. Like you said, I mean, Shanahan had been there since what, 95? 96?
Yeah, 95.
Okay. I mean, so that's a ton, right? He'd been there forever.
And you've got Champ Bailey, who's 31, and your coach is 33.
Right.
I mean, and those two notoriously had it out in 2010, right before he got fired, on the practice field. And it's not really hard to understand. I mean, and a lot of Broncos beat writers I've heard talk, a couple of them have come on local radio in the last, few weeks and talked about some of the things that went wrong. And one of them was talking about how he was just a baby face. And it was just hard to take him seriously for some of these guys. And to me, that's like you're paid. I mean, you don't have to respect somebody automatically, but you are paid to listen to them.
Right.
You're paid a lot of money to play football. And so the fact that they're babyface is a really stupid reason not to listen to a person, especially a person who led one of the most historically great offenses two seasons ago in NFL history. I mean, listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. Now, I will say, and I try to point this out in the article, and you know, I don't want to excuse or let him off the hook for the way that he dealt with people. He did not do that well, and I think that's pretty well documented that was definitely his biggest flaw, is the way that he communicated with people. But the other thing,
for sure,
and this is something where we view these things in a vacuum, but coaches are under insane amounts of pressure. Head coaches of any football team are under insane amounts of pressure. And he is not just doing a new job in head coaching, but he's also doing the new job as essentially the general manager. He's essentially running a football team in addition to learning how to be a head coach on the go, and all the pressures that go with that. And he's not at a job like, you know, where he would be if he came to coach the Colts, where he's going to have some flexibility, because I mean, we just had a crappy season. So if we had a season where we went 8-8, fans are going to be okay with it. We're going to, you know, maybe they'll be okay with it. Some fans will still be hateful, but that's fine.
For sure.
But we would see progress. There's a little bit more leeway for that. But if you have a team that has consistently gone 500 and you're the guy who the pressure is on, like, hey, we brought you in and you are supposed to bring us to the next level, and you have to do all that while earning the respect of these players who don't really want to play for you, kind of figuring out how to unify this locker room, and doing all the talent acquisition, all the day-to-day extra stuff that head coach steps you, that's a ton of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And a 33-year-old, it's not really the end of the world to me if a 33-year-old cracks under that pressure.
Right.
Especially if you don't have a general manager who you're paired up with and have this vision where you feel like, hey, the general manager and I and the owner of the team, we're all on the same page. We know what we want to do. And if it gets crazy in here and fans hate our guts for a season, we're okay with that. We
yep.
can roll with that because we have a plan. And I feel like that's Chris Ballard's mantra. I think if we all hated his guts and everybody could not stand him, he would not change a thing. He would do the exact same thing he does. And, you know, then we would shut our mouths when things started going better, when his vision started becoming realized. But a year and a half is not enough time to do that. And so if the Colts would hire him and, you know, keep him for a year and a half and fire him, I think we'd probably get about the same level of results as he got in Denver. You can't change a team culturally in that amount of time. You just can't.
Absolutely. And like you said, a lot of that comes with, you know, him being, you know, really close to the same age as a lot of his players were in Denver. So, I mean, you've got basically guys the same age. Some people take better to that than others, and especially if you're a yeller or, you know, you just really don't have the locker room surrounding you and kind of, you know, filling, buying into your system the way that you would assume that they would. That's kind of what you should expect. But I do want to talk about the way that the Colts should expect to see or what maybe the Colts should expect to see in McDaniels right after we get back from this break. So we're going to take a quick break for the ads, and then we'll be right back with more with Chris Blystone about Josh McDaniels. Welcome back, guys. We're still here with Chris Blystone. Chris, let's talk about a little bit about what maybe the Colts should expect to see you know, with Josh McDaniels. I think, like you mentioned before the break, the situation in Indianapolis is much more inviting than it was in Denver. The situation, and albeit with not with the level of success, obviously, that the Patriots have had as of recent, but the Colts have a very similar structure, not only with the owner, although they're nothing alike, that's not what we're getting at here. But the front office, you know, they all buy in together. The Colts are notorious for being one of the most together groups of front office people. I mean, you go back to Dungy, to Pullian, to all these guys that have worked under Jim Irsay, and they all loved him. They all say he doesn't meddle, regardless of how much we continue to to suggest that he does, and to various differences or to various lengths of how much he meddles. But there's a really inviting group here, I think. He's got one of the best scouting departments, I think, that could ever be put together in a year's time. He's got the hottest and probably the most driven GM in the league, in my opinion, at this point, other than maybe a couple other guys who are, you know, jumping into new jobs this year. But there is a huge, I mean, it's almost like welcoming him with open arms to come in here and say, look, like you said before the break, we've got this. Let's not sweat it. Unless this dude comes in here and just starts cussing guys out the first day of training camp, there's going to be an agreement on, I think, how this is supposed to go. It's like, look, they're not going to tell him, you know, this is how you need to coach. They're not going to suggest to him that this is how he needs to present his players in this fashion or that. They're simply going to be like, look, we expect you to be the leader. We expect you to act like a leader and be the team that's going, or be the guy who's going to take this team to the next level. We've got everything else in place. You've got a phenomenal young quarterback that still has his best years ahead of him, hopefully. We are going to do everything we can to protect him, give you the pieces that you need on offense to make that thing shine. And we're going to take care of the defense, and we're going to do this thing. So, I mean, this is a very inviting situation, I think, for Josh McDaniels, and it's probably one that I think that he's super excited about. The Colts had a meeting with Irsay and Ballard and McDaniels apparently this past Friday right before the Senior Bowl, and apparently everything went fantastic. I mean, especially, and from what I was told, at least, especially between Irsay and McDaniels. So I think that's another great sign that all things are pointing in the right direction, that everybody's on the same page, and that this is an environment in which he's going to have every opportunity to succeed as the Colts' next head coach.
Definitely. I mean, if I had to guess what that conversation looked like between McDaniels and Ballard, I'm going to guess Ballard is going to be pretty honest and upfront, because that's just the way that he is. The expectations for what they want from him, for what they were going to offer in return, that there's not going to be confusion. Everything's going to be clear, because Ballard, that's him. I mean, he's the notebook guy. He's going to have, not the guy from the notebook, but he has a notebook. He's the guy who's planned everything out. He has prepared everything, and he's going to be able to say, look, Josh, we know that you're excellent as a coach, and we believe that you can be an excellent head coach, but I got the personnel stuff, and I'm happy to provide you with the kind of players that you need. I'm really good at what I do. So let's get you in here, let you be really good at what you do, and not put other pressure on top of you. All the stuff that you had to deal with in the past, I've got your back, and you're going to be out to dry when things don't go. You know, if we hit a bump or something, we've been there. I mean, and he doesn't need to be told that, because he watched Chuck Pagano be supported, even though
right. This
season was a complete tire fire. Ballard always had his back. He never undercut his coach. He never did that. Maybe to the irritation of some of us Colts fans who were ready for him to do it a little bit, he was the smart one, and he didn't do that. And so you can have some confidence that, hey, even if I am as bad as Chuck Pagano, he's going to have my back.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then if there's not the illusion that we're one player away from suddenly just dominating. I mean, I think we could be very competitive next year. If they have a good free agency and draft, but we're not the expectation isn't that they add this one right player and suddenly we're going to be in the Super Bowl next year.
Right.
Now that's Jim Irsay's expectation, because he lives in dreamland and he'll probably tell everybody that, and that's totally fine.
Right.
Because that doesn't dictate how Chris Ballard is going to behave.
Right.
And so ultimately, you know, McDaniels can be confident in that vision that just, I really think, was lacking in Denver. And that makes a big, it really does make a big difference, because that vision is something that exists in New England. That's something that Bill Belichick is able to project on that team, and I think that's why they're so successful. And if you don't have to worry about that, if you don't have to be lost and drifting and trying to create that for the whole team and carry all that weight, then you get to do the thing that you already have proven you're really good at. And what he's really good at is drawing up plays and being incredibly creative with the offense. So that's what I expect him to bring, and that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what everybody expects, to be quite honest with you. But I also, to a point, You kind of, and not to look back at his past in the negative way, you know, with blinders on, so to speak, but to look at what he actually is. He's not coming in as the new offensive coordinator. He's coming in as the new head coach. This guy is expected to lead this team, to be a, you know, to be not only, not just a leader as in a rah-rah guy, but he has to come in and be the leader to get this team all on the same page every single day in practice, every single game. This guy is expected to be, I mean, he's not expected to be Belichick. People are idiots if they expect him to be Belichick. That's just the reality of it. No matter what tree somebody falls off of, they're not going to be that guy. That's not who they are. They're going to be, they're going to take points of his. They're going to learn from those guys who have mentored them in their past and where they've come from. But he's going to be Josh McDaniels. He's not going to try to be Bill Belichick's son. You know, that's just not the way Josh McDaniels or any other person, in my opinion, in the NFL who has a coaching position, it comes in to be. But he still has to run this team. He still has to get all these guys on the same page, like you said in the article, to buy into his system. And if they buy into his system, this could be a really talented group in a couple years.
Definitely. And that's really where the big disconnect was, is you either buy in or you don't. And the nice thing about this Colts roster, complain about them how you will, they were bought in on Pagano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
They never quit on him.
Right.
There were some lazy performances. There were some individuals that did. But as a team, they played hard for Pagano all season long, really with no reason to. And that's a whole lot of encouraging if you're a Colts fan, if you can say, all right, we know, they know, and they're, you know, they're smart guys. They knew that Pagano, you know, wasn't a great coach. They might have liked him. They might have thought he was a nice guy. But any of them that had played any kind of football knew, like, this is not a great head coach. But they still played hard for him, and that's encouraging to me. And that was without Andrew Luck on the field. So I think you get some of these guys back in leadership roles. And we don't have outspoken leaders, but we have guys who lead by example. And I think you get those guys in there, and I think you're going to see if they buy in. I think they will, because Ballard has created this environment where people just are ready to buy in. They like what he's doing, and I think they're going to be ready to buy in and say, all right, let's do it. And if they can do that, if they can get buy-in across the board, and if he can, and more importantly, if he can fix the things that he did poorly in the past, he's got to communicate better, that's no doubt. And he has to hire good staff. He's got to make sure that he brings in the right guys who can bolster the defense, who can, you know, help with the minutia of the offense so that he's not too tied up in that. He's got to have the right staff in there, but if he can do all that and then they buy in, it could, like you said, it could be a very good group. And most importantly, think how much more fun this offense could be to watch than it's been over the past few years, because spoiled. And I want Peyton Manning Star Wars offense back, man. I don't care if it looks the same. I want fun. I want to enjoy watching football. I had so much fun watching the playoffs because it was like watching actual football instead of all of this nonsense we had to deal with all season long.
Right.
I'm excited for real exciting football.
Absolutely. And one of the things that this continues to just, it just continues to sit on the back of my mind is I can't wait to see the dynamic between Chris Ballard and Josh McDaniels. I can't wait to see both of them on the sidelines to see how they kind of play off of each other, how they react, how they, you know, going through this after this. I'm also excited to see the press conference, and that is so weird. I don't know that I've ever seen that said that before, but I'm really honestly fascinated to see how these guys all look in a room together. You know what I mean? And that's, yeah. Like I said, that's really weird, but I really am. I think that when you have a guy who's come in with this much fanfare, so to speak, I mean, and that's a terrible word because it's so, I think that there's a large division of Colts fans that aren't in line with McDaniels right now. And I think that they're going to use it as a crutch for if he fails, told you so, everything in Denver was the same thing that's happening here. You know, but the reality is everything that we've said tonight. He's going to have a great chance to succeed. They're going to be two of the hottest guys on the market in the past 2 years for their respective roles. And there is so much talent on this team that just needs drilled into just a little bit, to make it really exciting, to make Indianapolis the football city it was for, you know, the first 3 years of Andrew Luck's career, that he basically threw the city, you know, took the city off of Peyton's back and threw it right onto his and just kept going. And we thought we were in for 3 or 4 Super Bowls in the next 3 or 5 years. I mean, we really did. I did. The Colts kept going up. Everybody was excited, like, oh my God, they get into the, you know, wild card, then they make it to the divisional round, then the championship game. You know, it just seemed like there was no ceiling high enough for this Colts team with Andrew Luck under center. But now, the Colts don't have a GM that is a jackass, more, you know, to you know, not mince words. But then they also have made the decision to go with an offensive-minded coach off of a guy who really stagnated this team, was continuing to offer positions to guys that he was familiar with, as opposed, you know, and that is kind of how the NFL coaching situations work. However, when you're giving to guys that haven't, I would say, earned it honestly in the league, I think that's a different story. When you hear about guys that McDaniels is apparently bringing in with Eberflus and Pete and just a bunch of different guys, you kind of see their evolution coming up, is that those guys are in there for a role, and those guys are in there to do one thing. And I do wonder, and I wanted to bring this up to you too while I'm rambling, that I think that there is some speculation that Eberflus may have an assistant head coach moniker added to his defensive coordinator spot.
I hadn't heard that, but that's interesting. Yeah,
I say that
I
because
be
he was offered.
I mean, the Colts have doled that out pretty liberally.
Yeah, and he was offered the defensive coordinator spot in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that was kind of the, you know, the selling point to follow McDaniels. I wouldn't say that that was stated as fact. I think that was speculated on quite heavily from a lot of the Dallas crowd. So that was, you know, some of the guys that cover the team there, they thought there's really no reason for him not to take over this defense that he's been, you know, basically working with for, you know, a while, to go to a brand new setup with new players and basically going to more than likely have to retorque this scheme in Indianapolis. Unless there was an added, you know, an added bonus, I guess you could say, to taking the position. So that has me very interested.
Well, and I really don't think that he could have landed at a better time. I mean, this really has worked out in a way, in such a way that it's just very advantageous, because he's missed the crappy year. I mean, despite the fact that we would probably have liked for Pagano to go last season, I'm kind of the mind. So first of all, I'll add this before anybody's thinking it while I'm saying all this. I'm not in the conspiracy theory camp. I'm not one of those who thinks that Luck has been like in a secret bunker practicing football, like in the Netherlands or something like that, and that he's totally fine, but that Ballard just, I'm not in that. No tinfoil hat for me right now.
Right.
But I do think that things actually, despite being pretty terrible this year, kind of worked out really well for the Colts, because now you're going to bring in a new head coach who's following a really crappy head coach, who's following a really crappy season where everybody got injured, mm-hmm. who has this young crop of talent who's now in their second year, and then has a high draft pick and is able to pick their own coaching staff, has this new kind of mentality from the general manager, and that general manager has now assembled what's, according to across the league, viewed as a highly regarded front office. And you get to hit them in the second year, and you're going to get your quarterback, I mean, obviously, ostensibly get your quarterback back.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, if Andrew Luck's on this team, that was an 8-win season easy.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
we were easily in enough games. We could have won 8 games this past season if Andrew was here and healthy. So you're basically getting a 500 team at worst probably next season,
mm-hmm.
and being asked to make them into more than that. It really doesn't get any better, because he's going to come in and look better immediately. And then if he's able to do some of the things that we think he probably can, he's going to look great. He's not just going to look good. So it kind of worked out really well, I think, because it takes some of that pressure off. and it lets you get settled and get things figured out. And yeah, he's going to want some personnel input, and he's going to want the kind of guys that he's familiar with that work well in his system. And I would expect that of any head coach.
Sure.
But he's not going to be butting heads. He's not going to be up against these expectations like he was in Denver, where it was kind of, it's your job to change this, and it shouldn't really take you anything because we think we've already got it. That's not going to be the case here. And it just, I think it's going to be as good a setup. Ultimately, I guess I said this in the article, and I'll say this, you know, here. If he screws it up, it'll be on him, because I think the situation is set up so well for him that the only way it gets messed up is if he gets in his own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point, Chris. I think that, you know, there are definitely ways where he could, you know, screw this up. There, I mean, obviously, even with Andrew Luck there, you know, if Luck doesn't kind of hit that next level, there's going to be questions. If that offense doesn't seem to have the design or the scoring power that some of the, you know, even some of the lighter scoring Patriots teams have seen over the past several years, somewhere in the mid 400s per season, then there's going to be questions. But I think that we as fans literally have to relax about this again. One thing that I continue to roll back on every time I start thinking, well, this is going to be that. I just can't wait to see this or that, you know, and I start going back and forth in my own head. And I constantly, and I, this is absolute truth, honestly, I just sit back and go, forget it, man. I am not doing this with a brand new GM, with a brand new coach. I'm not doing this right now. I will be glad to pick apart any game next year that I think does that warrants it, and I will be glad to pick apart McDaniels if he warrants it for anything. However, I am 100% in the I trust Chris Ballard movement. I mean, I'm just going to give him the trust. I think that he's a good enough judge of character to where if he had any reservations whatsoever, he'd move off of McDaniels regardless of how he's touted. That doesn't
absolutely agree.
Just does not worry me a bit.
He hasn't shown us any reason to think that he has poor judge of that kind of stuff. I'll be honest with you. One of the things that endeared me the most to Chris Ballard might be one of the areas that makes Colts fans the most irritated with him. The way that he dealt with Zach Banner, mm-hmm. Moving on from a mistake.
Oh, he should be.
Told me more about the kind of.
Oh man.
Told me more about the kind of general manager that he was than anything else, because you know so many guys to save their own neck or really to stick to, and Grigson was the you know premier example of this,
mm-hmm.
sticking to a mistake so long in the hopes that it would prove it wasn't really a mistake. And Ballard is not that guy.
Right.
And he is willing to admit, I screwed this up, let's move on, and all we can do now is move on and fix it and do something different.
Yeah. I love that about that move. First and foremost, and I've said this several times in the past, I was never a fan of the Banner pick. I was instantly against it. I was never for it. I thought it was possible that he could grow into a backup eventually. But even through training camp and stuff like that, you just didn't see any upside as far as I was concerned. And it kind of made me think, why the hell did he draft him? I mean, I just don't understand how he didn't see that the guy had cinder blocks attached to his feet in his film, because it took me 3 minutes to see that. You know what I mean? And I agree with you. He thought that the guy would get into an NFL system, he would get the coaching, and he would get some of the technique improved and would turn out to be better than what he showed on tape, I think. And Chris Ballard was like, look, this guy's just not doing it right now, man. We're going to move off of him. And I think that the plan was still to bring him back if he didn't get claimed off waivers. But I also think that they may still bring him back if he ends up, you know, getting waived again in the future. I think that that's quite possible, because that size is something that is sexy for a GM at the right tackle position. I think maybe he thought that Banner would grow quicker than what he did. And I think that he had all of the personal traits. He had all of the character upside that you want in a player. And I think that that might have made Ballard's eyes a little bit bigger than what you know, they should have been. But, you know, I'm 100% on board with you. I think that moving off of a mistake is one of the most fantastic things that a GM can do.
Well, and to me, yeah, I didn't mean to send us on that rabbit hole.
No, you're all right.
What everybody wanted to talk about was Zach Banner here at this point in the playoff season. But that's what they were tuning in for. But that, to me, just says a lot about a person's character. Not a lot of people in football, because, I mean, let's be honest, if you're at that place where you're a general manager or you're a head coach, you have an ego. And it's somewhat deserved, because you're very good at what you do, and that's a hard job to get. So being able to admit that you made a mistake, that's critical. If you can't do it, you're going to live and die by how good you evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
And you are to some degree anyway, but at some point you have to recognize that you are going to make mistakes. And it just impressed me that he was able to, I mean, I understand ideally it'd be great if he just hit every time, but let's be real here. It's not going to happen.
Sure.
So being able to move on, that's a big deal to me. And I think that says a lot about him. And so because of that, and just because of the other things that I think he's done really well with, he's created a different culture, and he has proven himself to be a trustworthy judge of talent. And he's not going to bring in somebody who's going to torpedo all of his progress. If he thought that McDaniels was still this kind of, you know, reckless force that was just going to come in and mess up all of the progress that he's made, there's no way he's going to go in there. I mean, if you think he didn't ask some of these things and do some things to try to rile him a little bit, like, I'm sure that it happened. I'm sure it was discussed. They went through some of those, I mean, you know, a whole bunch about what process McDaniels went through. The Dan Pompey article is great, that talks about kind of all the stuff that he learned. And we know that as people who had no contact with him.
Right.
If we know that, guaranteed Chris Ballard has more information than we do. So I'm very confident that if he has said he thinks it's a good move, I'm in. And I'm in until it's proven otherwise by actual measurable data and film and all that. So
yeah, I totally agree. So guys, I mean, we are on the trust Chris Ballard train. I mean, and I think that just for nothing else, the stress relief, you guys should be on it too. You know what I mean? Give yourselves a break. We've been harping on getting rid of Chuck Pagano for a long time. We've done it. We've got a GM that I think that 90% to 95% of Colts Nation trust. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the process. And let's just, you know, hope for the best and see where this ride takes us, man. But Chris, excellent stuff from you tonight, man. It was great. I really enjoyed your article. If you guys want to go check it out, get on StampedeBlue.com and go check it. It was really good stuff from Chris, really good insight, and you know, really well written. So, Chris, thanks for joining
me
tonight, man. This was a great time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make sure that you guys are all following Chris on Twitter. Chris, what's your Twitter handle, brother?
Chris Blystone. It's very, very complicated.
Oof. You hope you guys got that.
Chris Blystone.
You guys make sure you guys take your time and write that one down. You guys can also follow me on Twitter at MDainleySB. Make sure, like I said, you guys are getting to StampedeBlue.com and following all the stuff. The best analysis, the best everything from this group. We're really a great group at Stampede Blue right now. So make sure you guys are following everybody and getting to the site.
We got some cool stuff coming up this offseason, too.
We really
do. Definitely want to be plugged in.
Absolutely. And I cannot clear my throat. Sorry, guys. But it's really going to be a fun offseason, I think, here in the next month or two. We are really going to hit the ground running, and it's going to be about 100 mile an hour. So I hope you guys are all ready. So thank you guys all for joining me again on the Colts Cast. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I believe we'll have Brent Sobleski on tomorrow from Bleacher Report, and that should be a great show as well. So we'll talk to you guys tomorrow right here on the Colts Cast.